I'm kind of like Schultz. I know nothing. Some of you have watched that, haven't you? Open in your Bibles, if you would, to the book of Numbers, chapter 11. This is our third attempt to get through this, and I think we're going to make it. I entitled this, "That's It, I Quit." Because that's an exclamation of frustration. And we usually come to that point when, in whatever endeavor, we come to the place of stalemate. When it seems like we're up against a brick wall, that we've gone as far as we can go, that we can not go any further. And we become discouraged, we become frustrated. We come to that moment that down inside we're having a silent temper tantrum. And we're rebelling, literally, against what we've been asked to do or appointed to do. If we internalize that, I've stated before, I'll state it one more time. Excuse me. If we internalize that, it will lead to discouragement and anger. Discouragement is better than despair. Because at least in discouragement, we will continue to go forward. But in despair, we quit and give up and walk away. I don't want to see your anger come to the place of total despair, because that will lead to regret. Be careful of who you get frustrated with. Can I encourage you right now? Please don't get discouraged and frustrated with God. He is bigger than you, and you will regret that. So don't go there. And to help us, we're walking through this. Numbers chapter 11, verses 1 through 3. When the people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord, and when he heard them, his anger was aroused. Then fire from the Lord burned against them and consumed some in the outskirts of the camp. When the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to God, and the fire died down. So the place was called Taberah, which means the place of burning, because fire from the Lord had burned among them. I've gone through that first point of "That's it, I quit." The problems that Moses faced, those that he pondered, and that was in verses 4 through 6. Then the foreign rabble who were traveling with Israel began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel began to complain, "Oh, for some meat," they exclaimed. "We remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt. And we all had cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. We had all we wanted. But now our appetites are gone, and all we ever see is manna." Manna was what God supplied. So what they were complaining about was what God was supplying. He said this, they were saying, "It's not sufficient. It's not enough. It's not good enough. Even though it will sustain us And even though it's for free and it's here every morning, it comes with the dew. It's not enough, God. There's times when God gives you everything that you need, but it's not enough. And you rebel against him, and you begin to complain, and you begin to murmur, and you begin to turn your back on God. Can I encourage you not to do that, but to be grateful? Because a broken and a contrite heart God will never despise, but a haughty spirit he will crush. Now, that's not exactly the way it's put, but that's what it means. Moses faced that people problem. There was a three-step plan that I mentioned that will guarantee that you can overcome any problem with any person, no matter who you face, no matter who your problem is. If you'll do this three-step plan, it will solve any problem you have with any person. Number one, you love them like Jesus loves them. Matthew chapter 22, verse 39. Number two, you forgive them of anything and everything you think that they have done to you. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Number three, you pray for them every day. It's impossible to carry a prayer for someone in your heart and hate them at the same time. So if you'll do those three things, it will solve any problem you have with any individual anywhere on earth. Point B was Moses faced a provision problem. And we know what that was. It was the manna. It wasn't enough for them. They boiled it in a pot and they made flat cakes out of it. And the cakes taste like pastries that had been baked with olive oil. And the manna came down on the camp like the dew at night. But it wasn't enough. So there was a provision problem there. They tried everything that they could think of to make that manna taste like their food back in Egypt. But God never intended it to be like the food they had in Egypt. No more than God intends to his ways be like our ways. His ways are above our ways. And he does not want to placate us so that his ways become just like the world's ways. When you walk away from the world and you come and begin to walk for Jesus, it is so far superior. But there's some that get that longing in their heart, and they get to thinking about how it used to be. And some, sadly to say, they go back. I wished it was different than that. But they choose the world over God. And that's a sad, sad day. So point C, Moses faced a personal problem. And that was the last point that we covered last week. Numbers chapter 11, verse 10, Moses heard all the family standing in their doorways of their tents whining, and the Lord became extremely angry. But Moses also, it says, became very aggravated. Displeased, the King James says. That word displeased means that he's broken in two, that he was utterly destroyed. His heart was crushed. It was broken. Moses then had a breakdown, and it began to show. He allowed the problem that he faced to become larger than the God he served. When you begin to worry and wring your hands and become where you can't sleep or whatever over a problem, you're letting your problem become bigger than your God. Reverse that and make sure that your God is larger than any problem that you have. We must remember that it's He, not us, who fights the battles of life. He fights, and we just get to enjoy the victory. And I pointed you toward David and Goliath and that story. So that brings us to point two, and that's where we take up today. The prayer Moses prayed in chapter 11, verse 11 through 15. Moses asked the Lord, "Why have you brought this trouble on your servant?" He said, why are you doing this to me? If you've never said it, then you're not very active. Because if you're active, you've said it. "What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive of these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms and as a nurse carries an infant?" That really means like a nursing father would bear a suckling child. That dad can't do much for that kid. And that's what Moses is saying. "To the land that you promised on oath to their ancestors. Where can I get meat for all of these people? They keep wailing to me, 'Give us meat to eat.' I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, please go ahead and kill me." He's having a pity party, isn't he? "Son," and he's not the first, "son, I just thought I'd let you. Please go ahead and kill me. If I have found favor in your eyes, kill me. And don't let me face my own ruin. This is going to kill me if you don't." Moses is not the first to say this, is he? We remember something like this that came out of the lips of Elijah and some others that have served God well and faithfully. So Moses began to talk to God about his problems. And he talks to God in a way that reveals the condition of his heart. Your prayers will say an awful lot about you. Sometimes you ought to listen to yourself, because you'll understand some things that are going on down inside. Moses takes the tone with God that is irritated and irreverent. He's not so nice to God. He shows us how we are not to pray, especially in time of crisis. He's not going to play a song for you. He's not going to feel sorry for you. God looks at victory because he already knows the beginning from the end. And he's going to encourage you toward that victory. He's called you to do something. He will equip you to do it. He's already laid at your disposal everything that you'll need. And here you are bellyaching about it because you're not using what he's given you. Moses prayed a prayer, point A, of confusion. He was the one that was confused. And out of that prayer, everybody else gets confused. Moses seems to be asking God, why? 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 He seems to be saying, Lord, these are your people. They're not mine. I didn't give birth to them. They're your problem. They're not my problem. So why am I having to bear them and their burdens all this time? In essence, that's what he's saying. And don't we go there? We do the same thing. God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you making me do this? If you're a Sunday school teacher, you've said that. Why are you making me be in here with these brats? Even if you've got the seniors. You probably say it more if you've got them. But if you've ever had any kind of job, especially working in the nursery or trying to get somebody to work in the nursery, it gets where you want to pull your hair out. Moses failed to remember that the details of all that God called him to do, the details was left up to God, and it was his responsibility. So Moses had stepped up and began trying to do God's job for him. That was the real problem. He didn't have that responsibility. God did. God called Moses to do one thing: lead the people, not feed the people, not solve all their problems, lead them from Egypt to the promised land. And that's what Moses was supposed to do. But here he's trying to do all these other things. He's trying to create some meat. He's trying to be their chef. And it's not going to work. You and I have these kind of problems. I'm telling you. I hear people all the time in their prayers. I hear them ask God, why me, God? Why? Why? God, I need help. I've had so many of you ask me that magic question that I don't have an answer to. Pastor, why is this happening to me? I don't know. Ask God. He knows. It may be to shape you up. It may be to knock you out. I don't know. But because I have a heart of compassion. Why are you laughing at that? Oh, Debbie's the one that said, sure, sure, sure. I try to help you. I try to find a reason. But sometimes, and I've told a few of you this, you're trying to do something you don't have any business doing. Leave it alone and let God have it. Let him do what he's supposed to do. Let him be in charge. So I suggest to you, before you ask God why, we need to learn to ask things a little bit different. Maybe we need to be asking, why not me? Why not? Jesus said that we could expect trouble in this life. Sure. It's going to come our way, John 16:33. Job said that we could expect trouble in this life, Job chapter 14:1. If those who were experts are saying you can expect trouble in this life, why then should we expect lives that are trouble-free? and that we won't have any trials. Overcoming our problems, our trials, strengthen us. And those things that we overcome today, they're not going to bother us next week. So we become stronger. Things that bothered me 2 years ago, I've got victory over today. So it's a part of our growth, how we go from glory to glory to glory. And we should be progressing every day. But if you never have a problem, there's not going to be any growth. I remember in 1983. Yeah, that was a long time ago. In 1983, there was a pastor. I was in a church conference in Orlando, Florida, and a pastor made a statement that made no sense to me. He said, there is no growth without confrontation. And I thought, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And they're paying him to say that. But from that day to this, I can stand here before you right now and say, there's no growth without confrontation. If you don't confront those things that confront you, then you're not going to grow. You're going to stay stagnant. And if you never put yourself in a place to where Satan is confronting you, then you're not a problem for him. He said with satisfaction, we need to be careful. We can't make it through life with ease. We make it through life with the help of the Lord. The second question maybe we should be asking is what? Instead of why, let's ask what. When God allows trouble, problems in our lives, remember that it must be a part of his plan. He's well aware of what's going on. He put you on this path. He's the one that's directing your life. And Romans 28 or 8:28 puts it succinctly. All things will work for our good when we love him and we're called according to his purpose. He is growing us. He is showing us a whole new dimension, a whole new possibility in him. God was showing Moses what a miracle worker he was. When Moses was on the backside of the desert, when he was growing up in Egypt, he didn't see God doing miracles. But now, from the burning bush, he's called, go and set my people free. That was going to be a tremendous miracle. And then the plagues. And now they are over by the Red Sea, and the Red Sea opens up when he just holds up his staff and calls upon God. God is showing Moses a brand new dimension. It comes through those people that he's complaining about. Because God has equipped him to do this. He's growing us. He's showing us that whole new marvelous dimension of himself that otherwise we would never be able to see. I want to see my God is able. But before I can see that he's able, there's got to be something that he's able to overcome or eliminate from my life. God's purposes in the valley is to send us through, to change us, I like what he told Israel. He said, I brought you out to bring you in. I'm telling you, you go through the valleys so that you can walk the next mountain. It takes two mountains to make a valley. You may be on top of one, the next day you're down in the valley. Well, maybe the next day you'll be on top of the other if you'll keep on going. But you got to go through that valley to get to the next mountain. So maybe we need to be asking God, what is this for? What are you asking me to do? He sends us through that it will change us to become more like him. Thomas Watson said, affliction is the furnace in which God tries his gold. Nothing's going to make it through the pearly gates. Nothing's going to make it into heaven that has not been tried and tried by fire. If I quit down here, if I give up down here, if I get so caught up in the battle that I forget to enjoy the walk with God. And too many of us are so busy fighting that we forget that there is joy unspeakable and full of glory. Well, if this is joy, I don't want any more of it. And we become the bah humbug of Christianity. Affliction is the furnace in which God tries his goal. So maybe we should say, Lord, what's the lesson that you have for me here? What is it you want me to learn? Let me learn it quickly. What new view of you is this valley going to give me? So the question what will produce much more than the question why. Point B, Moses prayed a prayer of confession. The first one was confusion. Now suddenly he's confessing. That's in 12b and through verse 14 of chapter 11. Moses came to the place that you and I need to come to. He came to the place where he saw, felt, and confessed, God, I can't handle it. I don't know what to do with it. He knew that he was insufficient for the task. God, I can't do it by myself. The wisest person among us will be able to say, God, I can't do this by myself. You lead me and I'll follow you. And then you can go all the way through. And you can walk following in his footsteps. And he will lead you from victory to victory to victory to victory. He described himself as a father attempting to be a nurse to a child or to nurse a child. He's insufficient for the task. He has no ability to provide anything for those 2 million people, 2 to 6, that he's leading from bondage to freedom. Paul came to that moment when facing the thorn in the flesh. And he said, okay, God, your grace is sufficient. Sometimes weakness teaches us to lean on God, and he'll carry us all the way through. It's difficult to come to that place of total surrender. It's not easy for we as Christians to say, okay, God, I'll depend on you. I mean, after all, we're Americans. We've got everything we want down at the grocery store or the hardware store, or we always figure we can call Amazon. There's some things that those places can't provide for us, and we have to go to God. And when we come to the place where we know, and we know for sure that we can't, then quickly we can arrive at the place where we know that He can. I'm deeply aware that we face so many things that we don't have the ability to do. If you knew how many times I've knelt right down here, say, God, I can't. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know which way to turn. Would you point me in the right way? Would you speak to me? Would you lead me? I remember the Saturday night at my first church, 1976. I'd been pastor of that church for 3 months. 3 months. Only had 15 people. Of course, we were up to 35 at that time. And I laid across the little altar, handmade altar. I laid across that altar with my Bible open, and I said, God, I've preached everything in this book. There's nothing left for me to preach. And I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. Now, wasn't that stupid? It's okay, you can say, yeah. Because it was. I've learned so much after I got to the point where I didn't know. I remember the times I talked to Brother Brody, smartest man I've ever met, most knowledgeable about God's Word. And he said, Bernie, in the 60 years I walked with God, I know just enough to know that I don't know. So that brought Moses to that last point, and I'll close with this. He prayed a prayer of surrender. He said, God, if this is my lot, if this is what you intend for me, just go ahead and kill me right now. Do me a favor and spare me the hurt. It's in that verse that Moses lays it all down. Either get me out of here or kill me. Get me through this or take my life. He confesses, I can't bear the thought of facing total failure, of my hopes and your hopes, my dreams and your dreams, God. I don't want to fail in those, so take me out. Moses came to the place where he was ready to offer up his resignation. He's quitting, he's checking out. And he's saying, God, I don't want to walk away, so just kill me. I talked to a lady not very long ago. She was ready to give up on some things. Perhaps even God. We walked in the same shoes that Moses walked in. The problems of life sometimes overwhelm us. I don't know what might be coming against you today. That's the way we started this service this morning. I don't know what you're facing, but I know who is able. I suggest to you, don't go giving God ultimatums. Give Him surrender. Don't ask to get off this world, because there's no other one to go to. God's got you here for a reason. God's got a plan for your life. Surrender to Him. Would you bow your heads with me, please?